Blog Talk Radio.
Monday, shut up, Gucci Mane. I used to say Gucci Man, and somebody in the audience was like, hey, asshole, it's Gucci Mane. Thank you very much. And I was like, oh, okay. Whatever you say there, fella. And I started going with that. So anyway, and he's right, it is Gucci Mane. I like how we're starting with a debate about how to pronounce a rapper's name. Keeping it substantive here on Secular Talk. A lot of stuff to get to. So The Intercept has the scoop on a really disgusting story involving Speaker Paul Ryan. We're going to talk about that. We also have a Politico article warning us about how the Trump administration is going to be just like every other administration in terms of lobbyists and just being super-duper sold out, corrupt, terrible. Damn, my hands need some lotion. I'm touching this paper. You ever have that feeling when, like, your hands are dry and then you touch paper and it's like the bowels of hell unload on your face? That's what it feels like right now. And then I will be discussing the DNI report on Russia, and I will be mocking it because it's hilarious. I love how a bunch of idiots are acting like it's conclusive. Conclusive of what? Conclusive that they have no evidence, maybe. Okay, so anyway, let's get started here. And I also need one of those lint brushes. I'm realizing that right now. What are you going to do? All right, so we'll start with Paul Ryan and why he's a loathsome douche. Here we go. The Intercept has the scoop on a really disgusting story involving Speaker Paul Ryan. So they report here, just hours after passing the very first bill of the new Congress on Wednesday, one designed to roll back a range of environmental and consumer regulations, House Speaker Paul Ryan celebrated with a corporate lobbying firm at a fundraiser for his campaign committee. The vote on the Midnight Rules Relief Act of 2017 took place at 4:48 p.m. on Wednesday. The fundraiser at the offices of the BGR Group, a major lobbying firm, started at 7 p.m. Think about how disgusting that is. So this guy votes, by the way, to loosen regulations on mining and drinking water. Because, you know, arsenic and shit, who cares? Loosen those regulations. It's not the water that I'm drinking. It's the water somebody in a random Midwest place is drinking. So, yeah, forget about that. Don't worry about those regulations. You can get rid of them. I got to take care of my corporate buddies here and give them BJs behind a dumpster at a Denny's. I mean, come on, man. You're going to go in there and your first vote on the first bill of the new session is a wet blowjob to your lobbyist buddies. And then you have the nerve to, you know, go take a shower, hop in your car, or who knows, maybe you have a driver because you're a rich prick and you're congressman, of course, Speaker of the House, and then they're going to take you to the lobbying firm and you're going to party with those lobbyists. Guys, they're not even trying anymore. Like, it used to be the case that, sure, politicians were corrupt, but there was this sense of they knew what they were doing was wrong, so they had to try to hide it. But now it's like it's been baked into the rules. Like, the corruption has been largely allowed, you know, under the guise of campaign contributions and super PACs and things of that nature. So since the Supreme Court did that, and it's become so commonplace, Paul Ryan's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to vote to help out my lobbyist buddies and screw over the American people, and then I'm going to brazenly just go to their fucking get-together, and if people report on it, so what? They report on it. I got lobbyist friends. What's it to you? Well, that's everything, Paul. That's fucking everything. You know, people wonder why Congress has like a 9% approval rating. On a good day, it's like 21%. I mean, seriously, seriously, let that soak in. Let that marinate in your brain. Let that swirl around your head a little bit. On a good day, Congress is in the 20-something percentile range when it comes to favorability. How can that possibly be in a democracy? Because everybody knows on some level they're not representing us. They act like a giant fucking mafia. That's what they do. They find a way to get you to tolerate them, to go vote for them, because, oh, whatever, this person's the lesser of two evils. And then as soon as they get to Washington, all of the legislation they push for doesn't help you. It helps their donor buddies, their connected friends, the elites. And again, so you might say, well, that's just, you know, speculation. Is it really speculation? I mean, look at this. Is this really, does this sound like conjecture to you? I'm giving you the facts of a story right here, proving my case. But furthermore, we've also discussed the Princeton study, which found that the U.S. is functioning as an oligarchy more than a democracy. Because when you track what the American people want, what average people want in polling, it hardly ever, ever translates into the policy that we get. So then who's setting the agenda? Who's really making the laws? Who's getting their ideas implemented? The rich, the elite. So again, functioning as an oligarchy. And people like Paul Ryan, I guess what annoys me so much about a guy like Paul Ryan is that he's such a product of the system that I don't even think it occurs to him that he's doing something really, really wrong. Like, it doesn't occur to him that the way he's acting is how a bad person acts. Like, you're supposed to be principled and get to Washington and, you know, try to implement the platform you ran on because you think it's the best thing for the American people. But it's not like a debate of competing philosophies and ideas and concepts in Washington anymore. It's just a debate of dueling donors. Hey, my donors, I'm a Democrat, so my donors, the teachers' unions and lawyers and unions, we're combating the Republicans whose donors are, and Wall Street for the Democrats, to be fair. But for the Republicans, well, you know, they have Wall Street even more. They have big oil. So it's just competing, hey, which ones of our donors are going to get the best favors? And they just go back and forth on that. And a guy like Paul Ryan, it's like, it looks like it doesn't keep him up at night, and he never has that thought of like, hey, maybe I'm really doing something fucked up here by ignoring the people and not caring about the concerns of the people and doing the bidding of the donors. It just looks like he's totally accepted it. And he's like, well, this is what it is. This is how it works. And even if you laid it out for him and explained it, look, man, here's why this is wrong. Like, look, the American people want to increase in the minimum wage. The American people want to get out of all the stupid fucking wars. They want to raise the tax on the rich. Look at these polling numbers. Still don't think he'd care. He'd be like, no, I don't know about you, but I work for BGR Group, the lobbying firm over here who I'm buddy-buddy with. Understand that no real problem is going to be addressed until we fix this cancer in the system. The cancer is the money in the system, the legal money in the system. I want to build a wall of separation. You know how we have a wall of separation between church and state? It's a secular country. I want to build a wall of separation between lobbyist and state. We need to ban private money in the political system, publicly finance campaigns, which is called clean elections. It's called that for a reason. And then guess what happens? Virtually overnight, you're going to have politicians that are going to represent who? The people. Why? Because you just paid for their campaign. So all the money for them to run their campaign just came from a random grandma in Kentucky, a construction worker in South Dakota. Like that, so when the money comes from them, well, then they're going to represent them. But if the money's coming from, you know, ExxonMobil and some random hedge fund on Wall Street, who the fuck are they going to represent? So if you ban the private money in the system, you have clean elections, which is public financing. Well, then you're much more likely to get politicians that represent the people. And Paul Ryan, he would have no chance. Guys like Paul Ryan, most of the politicians you see in Washington right now, they would be voted out like that under a system where we actually had public financing, because they're no longer, The thing that gives them a leg up on everybody else right now is that they sell out the most. They sell out the most. They raise the most money, so they get their name out there the most. They buy the most ads. They get the higher name recognition, and then they get elected. That's why over 90% of the time, the person who raises the most money ends up winning when it comes to a congressional race. So when you take the money out of the system, guys like Paul Ryan are gone. There's no way they're going to survive because they're going to be up against people who actually have a platform, a philosophy that tries to, you know, care about the American people and implement what they want to implement. So they would never fight to do it, which is why we have to go around them. You know, you could do a constitutional amendment through Congress, but that's the way. I mean, they're the problem. You can't go to the problem to find the solution. So what we have to do is go around them. And thankfully, in the Constitution, there's a way that we could do that. We could do a constitutional convention through the states, and then get a clean election amendment to the Constitution, which bans private money, which would just seriously cripple corruption in the system. So Paul Ryan, I mean, he's one of the worst offenders. He doesn't even care. He doesn't even care. Yeah, so I voted to help the lobbyists and help the corporations and snub the American people. Fuck your clean water. Fuck your mining regulations. And I'm going to go party with them. That's what I'm going to do. And we're probably going to have a really fucking expensive dinner on the taxpayer's dime. And I'll laugh because I'm rich. And I don't give a shit about any of you. They're sending the message loud and clear. And it's time for us to hear it and act on it. Okay, now, we ain't going nowhere. We ain't going nowhere. We can't be stopped now because it's bad boy for life. All right, now we go to Politico, and got a similar story here on the Trump administration. Politico has an article here warning us about how the Trump administration is going to be just like all the others. So they explain, a growing number of Donald Trump's allies are rushing straight to K Street to cash in, despite the president-elect's pledge to restrain the industry, and their prize connections could draw huge paydays. Legitimate ties to Trump and his inner circle are exceedingly rare and coveted in a lobbying industry where many established GOP players kept their distance from Trump or defiantly opposed him during the bitter primary. Bona fide Trump insiders can expect offers of at least, get this, $450,000 a year downtown, according to a person familiar with efforts to recruit them as lobbyists. The latest Trump insider to head for K Street is Stuart Jolly, who was among the first employees of Trump's campaign, for which he worked as a national field director until mid-April. So this is what we call the revolving door. Remember, Donald Trump said, I'm going to drain the swamp. That's the problem. These lobbyists have too much influence over the politicians. Is Jeb a puppet to his donors? This is what he said in the primary. Remember that? Jeb, is he a puppet? Is he just doing his donors' bidding? I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm just asking. Well, this is exactly what that stuff is, man. So, and by the way, when hilarious, because when he called out Jeb for kowtowing to his billionaire donor, he was referring to a guy named Woody Johnson, one of the, I think, a CEO or the owner of Johnson & Johnson, and he owns a sports team. And come to find out that when Trump became the nominee and he was in the general election, guess who became a fundraiser to him and became the head of his fundraising efforts? Woody Johnson. Puppet? Are you a puppet to the billionaire? I don't know. I'm just saying. Anyway, that same billionaire, please, I'd like to be a puppet to you now, too. Hilarious. But this is, so this issue is people who are close to Trump from the beginning and people who lobbyists and corporations know, hey, that guy has got power because that guy has sway. That guy has President-elect Donald Trump's ear. So if you want something done, you go to that guy. So they take those kinds of people and they go, come here, big guy. How would you like it if we gave you $450,000? $450,000? For what? Well, you're going to be a lobbyist. So, you know, you're going to work for us. You're going to be a lobbyist. We're going to give you this nice office. You don't have to actually come in. You come in every now and then and check in, whatever. We're going to give you $450,000. And what do they get for that money? Access. They get access. So, hey, look, you know, there's this bill that's coming up that they're going to vote on tomorrow. and it's a bill about tax havens. And, you know, we got a decent amount of money stashed overseas, and we don't want that money to be dragged back into the United States, and we don't want to pay a really high tax rate. So here's the deal. If you don't mind, I'd like you to do your lobbyist job. Give the president a call and talk to him a little bit. You know, let him know our feelings on this matter, and let him know that if he does the right thing, that maybe there's some money in it for his reelection efforts in 4 years. Guys, this is how the game is played. Like, the mainstream media treats it like this isn't happening. They treat it like, well, okay, so some politicians went to Washington today, and the Republican from Nebraska said that he's against abortion, and the Democrat from New York and another Democrat from California said that they're in favor of abortion. And they had a debate. It was a principled debate. You really think that's how it unfolds? No, the way the sausage is made is disgusting. The way the sausage is made is backroom deals like this. Why else would you pay a former Trump insider $450,000 a year? Because they have a direct access to Donald Trump. They can pick up the phone and call Donald Trump. And these corporations want favors from Donald Trump. And this isn't that hard to piece together. But in the mainstream media, they hire people who will either purposefully turn a blind eye and look the other way, or they're too dense to even figure it out. And they're too dense to go, oh, that is what's happening. Or they'll call you a conspiracy theorist for saying it. Really, does that sound like a conspiracy theory? That you pay somebody a lot of money who's close to the main guy so that the main guy could do you favors? No, it's called human nature. It's called a basic incentive structure in the system. This should be banned, by the way. And then also, what else happens? Again, the revolving door. So they go out, they become a lobbyist, and then eventually, I want to get back in government. They get back in, they still have all those connections, and you go back, forth, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. And it's a circle jerk of money and power, and you ain't in it, to steal from George Carlin, who said something similar, I think. So this is the problem. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I never really stopped and thought about it until years after my father said it, but I was always on some level into politics, and I noticed he wasn't. He just wasn't. And one day I asked him, like, why? Like, I don't get it. Why are you not, you know, into this? And he just gave this response of like, well, look, they're all liars. I don't believe a goddamn word that any of them say. And it's this corrupt thing that's going on, and he viewed it as it's got nothing to do with me. Well, look, that last part's not true. It has everything to do with you because they set the laws and the policies that directly affect your life. But every other aspect of it, you look back on it and you go, oh, no, that actually was totally true, is that it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's all pulling the wool over your eyes to do corrupt deals. But see, that's where we come in, because we can do better than that. We can do better than that. That doesn't have to be the case. It's the way that the laws are laid out and the way that the incentive structure in the system is made that fosters and allows this kind of an environment. We don't have to allow this kind of an environment. We could change it if we wanted to. We could change the laws. We could say, hey, public financing by law, clean elections, no more private money. Hey, we're going to ban the revolving door. We're going to ban you becoming a lobbyist after. And that's another thing. Trump made these rules of like, well, if somebody is a foreign lobbyist, then they're banned from doing this and this and this. And, well, see how well his rules are being applied here? There's always going to be a little loophole that these assholes leave in there. So we need to come in and clean up the mess. When I say we, I mean the Bernie wing of the Democratic Party, young progressives, millennials, independents, people who are actually interested in the issues because they want to fix the system. We could fix it. We don't need to wait on these motherfuckers. And I always found it hilarious, the millennial bashing done by the older generations. Like, oh, so lazy, lazy and dumb. That's what they are. Hey, get a job, get a job. We're working on it in the economy that you motherfuckers crashed. But I could go on. I'll bite my tongue here. There's nothing more dumb than casual millennial bashing. So, but anyway, fuck Donald Trump, fuck his insider puppets, He's exactly like the other politicians, and he's going to work within the system, and he's going to listen to the establishment. And stories like this give you all the evidence that you need. If you think it's going to be different, why is this happening? If you think it's going to be different, why are all of Donald Trump's picks the establishment? It's not going to be different, man. If anything, it's going to be worse. Okay. Next. All right, we're going to go to another one of Donald Trump's picks. Sip my water real quick. Yes, you heard me right. It is water. It is not seltzer today. Goddamn shame, if you ask me. Goddamn shame. It's a goddamn shame. Donald Trump's pick for spy chief is right in league with all of his other picks, which means it's terrible. He's going with Republican Senator Dan Coats of Indiana. This is a guy who absolutely despises Edward Snowden. He loves Guantanamo Bay. He's defended torture. Now, all that is almost as bad as it gets, but here's the part that should really, really scare everyone. So The Intercept explains here. While ambassador to Germany, he was embroiled in an embarrassing scandal around the wrongful imprisonment and torture of German citizen Khalid Masri, who was kidnapped while vacationing in Macedonia, sent to Afghanistan, tortured, and released 5 months later without ever being charged with a crime. The Washington Post's Dana Priest named Coates as an instrumental figure in conferring with Germany's Minister of the Interior to ask that the German government not disclose details about what the U.S. did to Masri. The case has been very well publicized despite those efforts, and Masri has been represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. All right, so let me go ahead and boil that down for you. This guy was engaged in a torture cover-up. Donald Trump's pick for spy chief was engaged in a torture cover-up. It's amazing how things that would get anybody else in the country locked up, probably for a minimum of 25 years, these are things that are qualifications for a position in Washington, D.C. How amazing is that? A torture cover-up. Like, okay, all right, look, here's the deal, y'all. Sure, we got the wrong guy, whatever. We got an innocent German citizen who was on vacation in Macedonia. We kept him for 5 months with no due process, no habeas corpus. We tortured him, and then eventually we went, whoops, our bad, and then we released him. But let's just overlook that, and let's not pay any attention to it. And hey, Germany, do me a favor, don't let any of these details leak to the media. We don't want them reporting on it, because that would really expose us as really, really shitty guys who believe in torture and who don't believe in due process and who do torture and then try to cover it up. So do me a favor and just keep it on the DL, son. Keep it on the hush-hush. You know what I'm saying? Trump looks at all that and he's like, that's my guy. Tortures the wrong person, keeps him for 5 months, releases him, says, hey, don't let the media discuss this. We have a rabid band of authoritarians that are in Washington. And look, I'm beating up on this guy and I'm beating up on Trump, but your dear leader, liberal lion Obama, ain't much better, son. He's really not. I mean, they were just a story coming out the other day about how, remember when Obama did a drone strike against Anwar al-Awlaki, a U.S. citizen? No trial, no nothing. They droned him and killed him. Okay, that's a massive, brazen, disgusting violation of the Constitution. But yeah, the guy was a jihadist. We know he was a jihadist. We have the tapes of him saying jihadist shit. But still, you got to follow the process. That's why it's fucking there. But they also killed that guy's son, Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki. Oh boy. So now you're killing the 16-year-old son. And when they asked Robert Gibbs, who was part of the administration at the time, he said, well, he should have had a better father. What? So now we get to kill the family members. That's the shit we go after Trump for. Remember Trump? Well, we got to kill the families of ISIS. Close enough. They got the same skin tone. Kill them. I think they're Muslim. Kill them anyway. Who cares? So Obama's no fucking prize either. But now we learn they claimed, hey, we killed Abdul Rahman, but it was an accident. We killed a 16-year-old son of this radical cleric, but it was an accident. And that guy was an American citizen, too, by the way. The 16-year-old was an American citizen. The guy who they said was a jihadist who they were going after, turns out that guy got away. That guy they didn't kill. So they just did a drone strike that only killed the 16-year-old son, who's an American citizen. No evidence this kid was a terrorist either, by the way. And even if there was, again, you have to go through the process. That's why we have due process. That's why we have the Constitution. So you get it no matter what. The Democrats, I've said it before, I'll say it again, you get soft imperialism with the Democrats. Hey, we're not going to do 7 ground invasions and occupation, because that would be crazy. But we are going to do drone strikes, we are going to do traditional airstrikes, we are going to do special ops boots on the ground. With the Republicans, you get the, yeah, let's invade and occupy Iraq, let's invade and occupy Afghanistan, let's invade and occupy Iran. So they want to do all-out war everywhere. Obama's like, well, look, we'll do all-out war in 2 countries, and the other ones we'll just do some drone strikes and shit. Everybody cool with that? Everybody cool? See, I'm liberal, so I got to stay to my principles here, okay? Thank you very much. And this is where we're at. I mean, see, in a sane world, this would be a scandal that this guy is being considered for spy chief. By the way, Mike Pompeo, the CIA head, remember the story about him? Trump wants that guy for CIA head. What's he most known for? Saying Edward Snowden should be executed. The head of the CIA is a guy who openly wants Edward Snowden executed. Gee, what could go wrong? This is Trump's pick for that position. All of these things should be scandals. Where's the media? Again, establishment media only hires people that aren't going to rock the boat. They only hire people who will more or less parrot the line of the rich and the powerful and the elite and the establishment. So you hire people who are going to paint a picture of the world that coincides with your picture. You hire people who aren't that bright, like Don fucking Lemon, and therefore you shift the Overton window, the spectrum, to the right. So you don't have anybody on there saying obvious things like I'm saying you right now. Like, I'm viewed as radical for saying this. I'm viewed as crazy for saying that it should be a scandal that a guy who covered up torture shouldn't be spy chief. They would say, oh, look at this guy, far left, code pink, Marxist asshole, look at him. He's not even for torture. He's not even for allowing people to cover up torture and then becoming spy chief. Ha-ha! Prick. No, we need to bring our spectrum in the U.S. in Washington back to sanity. And we got to stand up and oppose people like this, man. We're so far off. I've said this before. Somebody was asking me, like, why do you care so much about this stuff? Because we're so far off from where we should be that if I don't say something, I can't sleep. Like, look at how far off we are from being reasonable. The media is not even talking about a guy who Trump wants for spy chief who covered up torture. He should be in fucking jail. He covered up torture. But they're like, yeah, oh, that's his pick. And the establishment is like, oh, yes, jolly good pick, good sir. What are we doing, man? What are we doing? This is so far beyond the pale, and nobody's fucking talking about it. But we all need to be talking about it. Because this is why you get those polls where U.S. polling agencies ask people around the world, hey, who's the biggest threat to world peace? By far and away, the answer is the United States. Everybody goes, whoa, what? Yeah, bitch, because not everybody has the biased view that you have being born in this country and having the shield, the wool pull over your eyes, excuse me, all this entire time, your entire life, where you don't even understand exactly what the government's doing with your money in your name. They know what the government's doing. They've been on the other end of it. So when they're polled, they go, yeah, the U.S. is the biggest threat to world peace. Duh! And it's shit like this, which is exactly why. So we got to fight back against it, man. I'm sick and tired of this bullshit. Oh, goodness gracious. All right, let me... Let me take a break. When we come back, Republicans pull a classic bait and switch move. You're not going to want to miss that one. And I read the DNI report. Uh-oh. And I'm going to lambast that thing because it's so stupid. Stay right there.
Not again.
The left. fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You a fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left.
Alright, I'm back, y'all.
Remember when I had that short chair and I had to put 33 pillows on it in order to boost myself up high enough for the camera? That was funny. Now I have a good-sized chair, and I still apparently get in it like an old man. Okay. Now, let me set up this next amazing story for you here. It is a classic move from the Republicans that's designed to fuck you over. So, let me give you the specifics, and you'll understand. Here we go. Republican politicians in states all across the country just pulled a classic bait-and-switch move. So, The Hill explains what they plan on doing with taxes here. Let's go through it, and then I'll break it down at the end for you. Legislators in some of the nation's most conservative states are considering new ways to boost revenue, including tax increases, after years of deep cuts. With legislators returning to capitals across the country this week, key budget negotiators are considering a range of ways to boost revenue, including higher gas taxes, sales tax on internet purchases, new fees, and even lotteries. It is a reversal in many ways of recent trends toward deep tax cuts, led by states like Kansas, where Governor Sam Brownback and the Republican-dominated legislature slashed rates on individuals and businesses in hopes of spurring economic growth. Kansas now faces a $350 million budget hole this year and a likely $600 million gap next year. They say other states who are planning similar tax increases, and remember, this is Republicans in control here, and they're considering tax increases. Tennessee, Arizona, Missouri, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Nebraska, many of them also have giant budget deficit problems. So it's funny because, look, the Democrats have warned Republicans all along, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't cut taxes for the rich, don't cut taxes for the rich, don't cut taxes for the rich, don't cut corporate taxes, don't cut business taxes, don't do it, don't do it. And they're probably like, why? We're going to do it, and what's going to happen is we're going to unleash the beast of the free market and the capitalist system, and then we'll actually have an increase in revenue to the government, because even though they're paying a lower rate, there will be so much more wealth creation that there will be a net increase in the money coming into the government. Well, guess what? They tried their philosophy, and it didn't work. The opposite happened. So they cut business taxes, they cut taxes on the rich, and it just blew a giant hole in the deficit. So they were wrong. But now, where does the bait and switch come in? The bait and switch comes in here. The kinds of tax increases that they're going to do. Higher gas tax, higher sales tax, tax on internet purchases, new fees, and potentially lotteries. So, who do those taxes affect? Middle-class people and poor people. So notice what they do. Classic Republican bait and switch. Scream about how, we're the party of tax cuts, we're the party of tax cuts, we're the party of tax cuts, we're the party of tax cuts. Middle-class people view that as, they're talking about me. They're going to cut my taxes. I work hard. I think I pay too much in taxes. I need to keep my own money because I got to put food on the table, pay these damn light bills. So, people vote for them because that's a promise that seems like it's going to affect them in a positive way. But who do the Republicans really cut taxes for? They cut taxes for big business and they cut taxes for the rich. So when they scream about how they're the party of tax cuts, they ain't talking about for you, bitch. So they cut the taxes for the people who don't need it cut, for the well-off, for the businesses. And then when they blow the hole in the deficit, they turn around and go, oh, we got to increase your taxes. We got to increase taxes on the middle-class people and the poor people. Because what are we going to do? There's this giant deficit, and we got to fix it. Oldest Republican trick in the book. Scream about cutting taxes, only cut it for the rich, and then when the going gets tough, raise taxes on you. Raise taxes on the middle class and the poor. All these taxes that they're planning on increasing, these would be these are regressive taxes. So what happens is you take a bigger chunk of this hurts the little guy way more than it hurts the rich. So it's not like they're saying, oh, man, we really got to raise taxes, and obviously what we're going to do is raise taxes on the income tax rate for the rich. Obviously what we're going to do is we're going to increase corporate tax. Nope, they don't say that at all. It's always taxes that affect the little guy much more. So, look, I warned you about it. Every time the Republicans say they're the party of tax cuts, the Democratic response should be, no, we are. We are. Because last time I checked, cutting taxes for 90% or even up to 95% of the American people and only raising taxes on the top 10% or 5% of people, you're cutting taxes for more people than the Republicans who want to cut the taxes of the top 5%, maybe 10%, and want to either keep taxes the same or raise it on 90 to 95% of people. And obviously with the Democrats, you get more for that money too. Because, you know, they'll have taxes lower on middle-class people and poor people, and then they also don't want to slash the social services and the social safety net programs. The Republicans do. So, God, it drives me nuts, man, because they just don't give a shit. And I'm not saying the Democrats are great, because they're not. They're also a giant sold-out party. But they're not as bad as these fucking cretins. I mean, that's such a gross move. You cut taxes for the well-to-do, and then when there's a giant explosion in the deficit, they dump it off on you, and they make increase your taxes. This is similar to what happens with the Wall Street crash. So you have, you know, all of these companies on Wall Street make horrendous decisions that bankrupt themselves, and then the government rushes in and goes, oh, we have to save the economy, and in order to do that, these rapacious price-gouging institutions that committed fraud on you, we have to bail them out. So they make terrible decisions. They tank their own companies. They built that, and then regular people have to rush in and use our tax money to bail them out and prop them up. There's no bailout for the people. They're getting kicked out of their houses. They're getting foreclosed on. But tax money goes to bail them out. It doesn't bail out regular people. Same thing here. Oh, we got to cut taxes. Oh, let's cut taxes for the rich. Oh, now there's a giant hole in the deficit. I guess the people have to bail out the deficit. I guess regular people have to have their taxes increases, not the rich. Never the rich, never the powerful, never the connected, never the corporations. Never, never. Oh, it's always on you. It's always on you to step up to the plate and fix everything. And it's like the old saying goes, the way our system works right now, privatize the profits, socialize the losses. So you understand that? When times are going well, corporations take the money that they're making and they, you know, shove them in tax havens overseas and they don't even pay taxes on it. When things are going bad, taxpayer rush in, bail them out. So there's never a system that's created that's good for the little guy, good for the regular guy. It's constantly, perpetually, repeatedly screwing you and helping them. It's time to change that. Okay. Next. Oh, I got to talk about the DNI report now. How gross. So I read the 25-page DNI report on Russia this weekend, and actually, to be fair, it's not. It says 25 pages, but some of them are blank. Who knows why? But man, what an embarrassing report. So understand, I went into it with a totally open mind, because yeah, is it possible that Russia did the DNC email hacks and then gave the information to WikiLeaks and then WikiLeaks ran with it? Of course that's possible. Of course. And does Russia prefer Trump to Hillary? Yeah, of course they do. And I don't even think the reasons for them doing it were really all that crazy. So, for example, He made clear, Donald Trump made clear, that in Syria he would work with the Russians on the side of the Syrian government and against the jihadist rebels, and that's something that they like. And Hillary made clear she's more on the side of the rebels and more anti-Assad and against Russia and their interests in Syria. So on that alone, you could say, of course, they prefer Hillary Clinton. But then furthermore, Hillary made comments on the campaign trail like, you know, she threatened a military response over a cyber attack. So starting a war over, a cyber issue where they go back and forth. And she's been repeatedly hawkish and, you know, he's been willing more to compromise and negotiate on the issue of Russia specifically, almost to a fault, because there were cases, there was a story about one of his top campaign advisors, Paul Manafort, who actually does have business connections in Russia. I believe that. I don't necessarily believe the stories about, oh, Trump has connections there, because I haven't seen any evidence of that. But Paul Manafort, I do believe, and I've seen plenty of evidence that in Russia and in Ukraine with the Russia-aligned people there, that he does have business interests there. But that's neither here nor there. Bottom line is Russia did prefer Trump to Hillary. No, nobody's surprised. So they would want him to win. But is that something that they actively carried out and pushed for? No. So first of all, in the report, they say, well, let's be clear, of course nobody hacked any voting machines, and there's no evidence of that whatsoever, so you can put that to rest. So, and on that alone, like, the media has been running with headlines like, Russia hacked the election, Russia hacked the election, Russia hacked the election. And they've said it so much to the point where 50% of Democrats think that Russia hacked the voting machines and changed the tally to let Trump win. That's crazy. That's a total and utter conspiracy. It's totally made up, but it's implied by all the headlines, Russia hacked the election, Russia hacked the election, Russia hacked the election. So first and foremost, that is not the claim being made, even by the intelligence community. They're like, no, that's not that. No, that didn't happen. But the claim is, we have the FBI and the CIA have high confidence that it was Russia that hacked the DNC and then gave the information to WikiLeaks. They also say in the report the NSA has, quote, moderate confidence. What does that even mean? I mean, some people at the NSA are like, eh, not Russia. And then, you know, Greg is in the back like, actually, I looked at the algorithm, and it doesn't appear to be Russia, so this could be a misunderstanding. What does moderate confidence mean? It seems like a lot of the stuff in the report is just kind of slapped together, but the report is much worse than I'm even letting on right now. So, as I'm reading through it, I'm waiting. I'm like, okay, again, open mind. Of course it could be Russia. And, you know, whether or not we should read the DNC hacks anyway is a separate question. I answer yes to that question. I think the DNC, the RNC, and campaigns should be part of transparency laws. And we should be able to see it, just like we can see the stuff coming out of the White House eventually when it's declassified. But I'm sitting there, I'm waiting. I'm like, okay, so what do you got for me? Come on, guys. What do you got for me? They never get to any evidence. they just regurgitate the narrative that we've heard all along. Okay, so here's the deal. It's Russia. See, Russia got involved, and they did stuff to help Trump. And with NSA, oh, kind of sure, but not really. But the CIA sure, and the FBI sure, and the intelligence community saying it. And so, yeah, it was Vladimir Putin was calling the shots on this thing. So I'm waiting. I'm reading. And you expect at some point they say, okay, here's how we came to this conclusion. They never get to that. They just explain what they think happened, and they don't give you any evidence. And then it occurred to me when I was reading through the report, oh, shit, I just kind of, like, breezed through the first part. I went back and read it. The first part was like, oh, all right, so I just want to let everybody know here that, look, this stuff is, like, super-duper top secret and, like, highly classified, and we can't, nor should we, even, like, try to release, like, the best stuff we got on Russia. So, like, don't even worry about that. Like, you know, it is what it is, bro. We're just, we're telling you that to protect, we're protecting people. That's it. We're protecting people in the field. So we are not even trying to put all the biggest stuff we got in there in the report. They don't put anything in the report. Guys, so I get like what I think is less than halfway through the report. I didn't look at the page when I hit this point, but at a certain point, the report turns into, I'm not kidding, just bashing RT. What? The report was supposed to be. Here's the evidence of the Russian government hacking the DNC to give it to WikiLeaks. They don't make that case. They provide zero evidence. And then, like, halfway through the report, they're like, and Russia Today, the television show, the television channel, has a lot of shows that are critical of the U.S. on it, bad. And, like, you know, they bring up Abby Martin's old show, Breaking the Set. I know Abby. I DM'd her. I'm like, you're brought up in this fucking report? What is going on? And they just describe, yeah, you know, they're critical of U.S. interests around the world. Yeah, yeah, yeah. By the way, you know who else should be like that? U.S. media. U.S. media should be super critical of what the government is doing. That's kind of their fucking job. But they're just, like, bitching about RT. RT, Kremlin-funded, you know. So they're harsh on the U.S. and they're critical of the U.S. Look, do I take everything I read from RT and go, ah, that's totally true. It's written down online. It must be true. No. But do I dismiss it all? Of course not. I don't dismiss that any more than I'd say, you know, hey, PBS is funded by the imperialist U.S. government. Therefore, dismiss 100% of what they say. No, that's stupid. You go on a case-by-case basis. Some of the stuff is good. Some of the stuff is bad. But it's just they're just bitching about RT, and they go on and on and on and on. So there's no evidence. And then furthermore, at certain points, like they say in the report at one point that RT is critical of, quote, alleged Wall Street greed. Alleged Wall Street greed. Are you getting the picture painted here on this report, how perhaps it is purely and completely political? That's not objective. That's not some shit that should be in an intelligence report. Alleged Wall Street greed. They even take some time to go after Occupy Wall Street in the report. So when I finished reading the report, that was it. I thought, come on, man. Anybody who's parroting this thing is like, what? What does it mean? Oh, that Joy Ann Reed wrote an article, the increasingly detailed evidence that Russia indeed hacked the U.S. election. They didn't present any evidence, never mind detailed evidence. So understand, guys, does this mean Russia's good? Does this mean I'm saying they definitely didn't hack it? No and no. But you have to understand the burden of proof is on those making the claim, and the U.S. is now escalating with Russia over this, and they did sanctions on them. Now, I wasn't against sanctions for the Crimea situation because I thought they were merited in that situation. I don't think they're merited over this. You know what the response is if Russia actually did do this? You increase your cybersecurity, you fucking dipshits. Try to make sure it doesn't happen again. That's what you do over something like this. And then the final point I want to make is, and there was a great tweet about this. Somebody said, so let me get this straight. The mainstream media is freaking out because the mainstream media is freaking out because the DNC is angry that we revealed a report that showed they tried to tank Bernie's campaign. Something to that effect. Let me try that again. smooth, Kyle. Smooth. I should actually just pull it up, but I'm not going to take the time to pull it up. So as somebody on Twitter pointed out, ultimately, what's happening here is deflection and obfuscation from what we learned in the DNC leaks, from what we learned from the WikiLeaks, because they proved, not based on what they said, but based on what was in the fucking emails, they proved that they tried to take down Bernie Sanders from day one. They tried to put their finger on the scale to push it in favor of Hillary Clinton from day one. So, in other words, the government cannot defend what's in the DNC emails. So instead of having that conversation, they can't have that conversation because they'll get destroyed. So you deflect and obfuscate and go, Russia, 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 Russia hacked everything. That is no different than what happened with the Pentagon Papers. When we learned that our troops in Vietnam were using Agent Orange and napalm on innocent villagers and killing civilians, massacring them, what did they do? They would just scream about how the people were criminals who released the Pentagon Papers. They'd say, look at them, look at them, look at them, look at them, traitors, treasonous, they're so bad, they're so bad. Well, wait, why are you focusing on them? Seems like there's a bigger issue at play here. the fact that you're fucking massacring villagers. They did the same thing with Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden released information where we found the government spying on everybody. And instead of talking about the government spying on everybody, they started talking about just Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden, high school dropout, bad person, traitor, treasonous, loves Russia, yada, yada. It's the oldest trick in the book. You deflect, you obfuscate, you change the conversation. So Chelsea Manning, same thing. Chelsea Manning reveals that in Iraq, our soldiers bombed civilians, and then we did a double tap, circled around, bombed them again when the ambulance showed up. And you got the U.S. soldiers laughing about it as they're bombing them. Instead of having a conversation about that war crime and that gigantic, disgusting thing, and maybe we should get those people in jail, they're still walking the streets free to go, Chelsea's locked up. And they change the conversation to Chelsea. Something's got to be wrong with Chelsea leaking all these crimes that we're committing. Something's got to be wrong with her. Not us. Her. You know? And at the time, she was Bradley Manning. And so they went, oh, see? Off in the head because she's trans. So they deflect and obfuscate. Oh, shit. Those emails show that Hillary Clinton said politicians should have a public and private position. So in other words, she's admitting, I'm a liar. Those emails show that Hillary Clinton wants totally open trade borders, which is like TPP and NAFTA on steroids. Those emails show that Hillary Clinton's preferred Syria policy, the no-fly zone and the safe zone, she knew that this is going to lead to massive numbers of civilian casualties, and she was still for it. They have no response to that. They can't explain that. How are you going to explain that? Yes, my preferred policy, massacre civilians. I don't care. They can't explain that. So what do? Deflect. Obfuscate. She said, you know, there's a mood in the country right now that's kind of like bigotry against the rich and powerful and successful people. I mean, you guys are such victims. This is stuff she said. You can't defend that. Nobody can defend that. So what do? Attack the source. WikiLeaks, Russia, allegedly, maybe. So that brings me to my final, most controversial point. We should have seen the DNC email leaks anyway. I'm not in favor of any state hacking of anybody, whether it's people doing it to us or us doing it to others. I'm not pro-hacking, okay, when it comes to these state actors and their own nefarious purposes. So up your security. But should we have seen those anyway? Yes, we absolutely should have seen those DNC emails anyway. And now that conversation is being pushed to the side and ignored, and there's nothing but fear-mongering and escalation going on with Russia, and people are using a report with zero evidence as if it's conclusive. And this feels a lot like the run-up to the Iraq War. It just does. I mean, with the intelligence community, what are you going to do? Intelligence community, oh my God, they said Saddam Hussein is weapons of mass destruction. First of all, notice how many times they move the goalposts, too, and they'll do this with Russia as well. First it was Saddam Hussein did 9/11. Then we found out that was bullshit. And they went, oh, did we say that? No, we didn't mean that. What we meant was he has weapons of mass destruction. And then found out that wasn't true. Then they moved the goalposts again to, well, he's just a bad guy. So the justification kept changing for why we need war. Like, oh, he did 9/11. No, he didn't. He has weapons of mass destruction. No, he doesn't. Okay, he's a bad guy. There's a lot of bad people in the world. It doesn't mean you go in there and you fight an offensive war against a country that doesn't attack you. But now it feels like the same thing. There is no evidence. They're not even presenting the bullshit evidence. Remember with Iraq, they had the bullshit, you know, yellow cake thing and Colin Powell going to the UN and holding up a vial. And, like, there was bullshit evidence back then. This, they're just like, the report doesn't even attempt to lay out evidence. But you have idiot pundits like Joanne Reed go, oh, there's so much detailed evidence. Because she didn't read the report. She doesn't care. She has her narrative and she's sticking to it. Russia bad, Russia evil, you know, the Russia turned the election over to Trump and therefore, let's fearmonger and escalate, and who cares about the consequences? I fucking care about the consequences. I would much rather not be in a standoff with another fucking nuclear power, thank you very much. And this report from the Democrats shows that they've gone full-bore 1950s Republican style. Just like with the old-school red-baiting, that's what they're doing now. Okay. All right. Let's go to the White House the White House YouTube account and their new video on Obama. I have a lot to say about this one. The White House released a video of a bunch of celebrities saying good stuff about Obama and bidding him farewell. Let's take a look, and then I want to discuss.
When he just changed all the rules on the table in regards to Cuba with the most succinct motivation imaginable, which is what we've been doing hasn't worked, which made all the sense in the world.
My Obama moment was the signing of the Paris Agreement and making the United States the leader in the fight against global warming.
When I was at the UN and I heard our president say that climate change is the most important issue facing not only this generation but all future generations, it was inspiring.
For me, it was traveling with the president to schools in Boston, and the way he engaged the students was just one of those moments to see him connect like that, that I think you see throughout his presidency.
The CBS experience with Michelle was pretty cool, and dancing with Barack at his birthday party. And he's a good dancer, you know, he should not get any flack for that. You're a good dancer.
He's my role model, my idol, because I want to be president.
When he wished Happy New Year to all the Iranian Americans and he said, Aida Shom Mubarak, live on CNN, perfectly.
Yeah, I often do remember Jackie Robinson, everybody does. To me, he would be the Jackie Robinson in politics from my standpoint.
Okay. I don't know what it is, if it's just something about me or if I'm right, or I don't know what it is, but I have this aversion to these, like, fluff pieces. I can't stand the obvious propaganda when you got, like, the happy-go-lucky music in the background and all your favorite people, fucking Michael Jordan and Ellen DeGeneres. Like, let me tell you something about this guy. He was the best fucking president ever. Ever, and we're only saying good things here, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to say anything that's bad. We're not going to say anything that's negative. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? What are we doing here? It's just a fucking out-and-out propaganda video. This is just a more polished version of fucking Putin on his horse with his shirt off. Like, why don't I look good? No, you don't, fucking slapstick dunce boy. Yeah, look at me with my man titties. Aren't I so attractive? No, you look like a doofus. But this is a more sophisticated version of that because you get people who are actually good at, you know, a message and video editing and all that shit. But, so I don't know, I just hate things like this. I don't even disagree with everything they said there. So the whole thing is even more cringeworthy, but, so they said, oh, you know, a Cuba agreement was a good thing. I think that's what Tom Hanks said. Totally agree. Couldn't agree more. I give Obama endless credit on the Cuba deal. It was the right thing to do. The Paris agreement, same thing. I give him a lot of credit on that, and we should be clear to give Obama credit where he's earned it. His immigration executive order, he gets credit on that. Now, the courts have tied that up, but he was right on that immigration executive order. He's been releasing nonviolent drug offenders. He was right. He's right to do that. He did the Iran deal. He was right. He's right to do that. So there are many areas where I'm going to say, you know what, good job, and it's better to have you in there than, you know, any fucking Republican alternative. No question about that. But here's why this frustrates me. Obama just spent over a year pushing for TPP. TPP, which, yes, would ship out more U.S. jobs, according to the Economic Policy Institute. That's not just me talking. And by the way, every other trade deal has shipped out jobs when they promised that that wouldn't happen. So why am I supposed to believe this would be any different? TPP has us cut a deal with Malaysia. Malaysia, quote, tolerates slavery. It allows Brunei in it. Brunei has Sharia law. Mr. Human Rights Defender is like, oh, let's reward a country that does Sharia. We already do it with Saudi. Why not do it with somebody else? So, but that's, of course, that's not discussed. Don't talk about TPP, job-killing TPP. Don't talk about the drone program, which has killed many civilians, and we've even gone as far as bombing Yemeni weddings, thinking it was a fucking Taliban procession or some shit. Don't talk about any of that, even though these things are war crimes. Don't talk about the fact that we're doing 7 different interventions right now, even though that's way more than even under Bush. Don't talk about the fact that we give over $1 billion worth of weapons to Saudi Arabia every single year, and they turn around and use that to massacre civilians in Yemen. Don't talk about the $38 billion we give to Israel as they continue occupation and expansion and apartheid. Don't talk about the increased NSA spying. Obama put that on steroids and human growth hormone. Don't talk about how Obama let Wall Street go and didn't prosecute them. Don't talk about Guantanamo Bay still being open. Now, again, what is the response to it? There is no response to this. I mean, the best you can come up with, people will say, but Republicans. But Republicans what? For Guantanamo Bay, it was set up extrajudicially. It's an extrajudicial prison. You know what that means? Outside of the law. Guess what? That which can be set up extrajudicially can be shut down extrajudicially. So you know what I do? I do an executive order and say, I'm going to shut this down. And then when they say no, I go, take me to court. Take me to court. And I want you on the record. We are for the extrajudicial prison, which doesn't believe in habeas corpus and due process and is against the U.S. Constitution and international law. And you're against it. We are for breaking the law. You are against breaking the law. Thank you. Got it on the record. Appreciate it. Thank you for doing my work for me and getting my message out there as being the good guy and you're the bad guy. So there's so many things, man, that look, Obama overall is a mixed bag, and we're going to do a long report card on him very soon. But we need to keep everything in perspective, and you have to be nuanced. Don't do these fluff pieces. Don't do the hero worship. I mean, we still live in a country where 50% of the American people make $30,000 a year or less. We still live in a country where 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. We still live in a country where hundreds of thousands of people are homeless. We still live in a country that doesn't have a free college. We still live in a country that doesn't offer paid vacation days and sick days by law. We still live in a country that doesn't have a minimum wage that's a living wage. Spare me your, oh my goodness, this guy is the best ever, and let's do these fucking fluff pieces on him. Let's be adults and try to fix the problems further and keep his legacy in perspective and say there are some good things and there are some bad things. Okay. All right, now President Obama is going to make an interesting admission here talking to George Stephanopoulos. President Obama spoke to George Stephanopoulos, and he said something that's getting some headlines because it's a pretty interesting admission.
Does the experience become a liability? What put this in my mind was reading Bob Gates' memoir. And he talks about being in the meetings with you and talking about the raid on Osama bin Laden, saying maybe he's getting too cautious. He's been there too long.
Yeah.
Is that a risk?
Well, what I'll say is this. I believe in term limits for presidents because I think that there is no doubt I'm a better president now than I was when I started. I am the best president I've ever been over the last year or two. My team is more effective than it's ever been. But what is also true is that, number one, this and sustaining the energy and focus involved in doing a good job, I think, starts to get tougher the longer you do it. The second thing is the bubble's the bubble. And I think we've done a pretty good job staying in touch with the American people, but at a certain point, you can't help but lose some feel for what's on the ground because you're not on the ground. And
you didn't think Donald Trump could win.
Case in point. So that tells me that there's a utility in the democracy refreshing itself on an ongoing basis.
So that's Obama saying, to some extent, yeah, I was in a bubble. I was in a bubble. I didn't think Trump could win, and I was wrong. Here's the thing. There were some of us who could imagine it, including myself. In fact, in my prediction, so I predicted Hillary would edge out the election. But I gave a very, very strong warning, even in the context of that prediction, where I said, if you don't think he can win, you're just wrong. And there were so many pieces of evidence, man. So even though he had record unfavorables, at one point it was 63%, Hillary was right there with him. He was the most disliked politician in America. She was the second most disliked politician. That's literal. That's according to the numbers. People looked at her record and they cringed. And they were like, oh, God, she feels like the establishment. She feels like the status quo and business as usual. And she is those things. She just is. So the reason why Trump was able to win, it's very simple. Obama campaigned in 2008 on change, hope and change, and he portrayed himself as the anti-establishment candidate. Well, who portrayed themselves as the anti-establishment candidate in 2016? Who campaigned on change in 2016? Donald Trump. It wasn't Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was on the platform of America's already great. I'm going to continue what we're doing. That's what we're going to do. Donald Trump was the make America great again. Let's go into Washington and shake things up. We're against the establishment. The Washington establishment is screwing over everybody. Now, again, that's his campaign rhetoric. How he governs is totally different, and all the evidence right now is suggesting he's going to be super establishment like everybody else and mix it in with a heaping dose of authoritarianism. So he's going to be a nightmare in office governing. But in terms of how he campaigned anti-establishment. He campaigned on the platform of change, and Obama didn't realize, because he was in that bubble, that, hey, maybe it's not a good idea for me to go around pushing TPP for the last year and a half, which is what he was doing. And you had a Democratic candidate who had pushed for TPP 45 times. Trump even brought it up in the debate, and he was right. Hillary called the TPP the gold standard of trade deals. These trade deals, that's exactly why they lost the election. The Democratic firewall fell. The Democratic firewall is the Rust Belt, is former depressed factory towns. So their one thing is, hey, my job's gone. Hey, we don't make as much money here anymore. A lot of people don't have jobs because the factories packed up and moved to Mexico or moved to Bangladesh or moved to Turkey or moved to China. So we need somebody who's going to shake things up and who's going to have jobs here. And what did Trump do? Every speech, hammering the TPP, hammering it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And Hillary, even though she was tepidly against it, she never brought it up. She had flipped because Bernie did the right thing and made her, pushed her to that position. But then she never brought it up. She was never like, oh, TPP is wrong and NAFTA was horrible and this and that. She couldn't do it because she supported those things. And in her heart of hearts, she still supports those things because she is the establishment. So, yeah, we warned you. We told you it could happen. Because what the Democrats were doing is they were only seeing half of the picture with Trump. They were only seeing the bigoted shit. They were only seeing the Mexicans are rapists and let's ban 1.6 billion Muslims and, you know, let's. So in their mind, they had that picture of Trump as all of Trump. They just dismissed or discounted or willfully ignored when Trump said, I'm going to protect Medicare. I'm going to protect Social Security. I'm going to do infrastructure spending. We're going to make America great again. We're going to spend here. We're going to stop nation building over there. We're going to kill TPP. So my thing is, are there like genuine deplorables who support Trump who are on his side because of the bigoted shit he said? Yes, absolutely. And those people, yeah, there are some who are irredeemable. It is what it is. But there are a lot of Trump supporters who are more in the other camp, where they overlooked that other shit, and they said, he's the one that's making it seem like he's going to keep my job here. So what am I going to do? He seems to want change more in Washington, and Washington is corrupt and broken. What am I going to do? I'm going to vote for him. That's why there were many former Obama voters who voted for Trump. Obama did not see that coming. And he's admitting he didn't see it coming. He was in the bubble. And we know it's true that he was in the bubble because he was pushing for TPP the last year and a half as Donald Trump was campaigning and winning on that issue. Okay. Bitch. All right, now let's talk a little bit about a big issue that is rarely discussed. Hey, by the way, I was up late last night and I saw a really awesome show. I forget what channel it was on. It may have been National Geographic? No. I don't remember the channel it was on. But it was about the transition from, because we have the inauguration soon. I think, what is it, in 10 days? It's on the 20th, and it is the 9th right now, so 11 days. They were talking about the transition and, like, what happens on Inauguration Day. Man, it is fascinating, and it kind of got me a little pissed off. I'll tell you why. So they say that, like, everything changes in the White House in 5 hours. They make it so that the White House goes from being the previous president's to the next president's in 5 fucking hours. So, you know, just to give an example, when it was H.W. Bush to Bill Clinton, when they're out, you know, doing the inauguration and they're sworn in and all that stuff, and then they have, like, the previous president and the next president have, like, coffee in the morning. It's a tradition or something. Like, all throughout that period, like, in the middle of the day, they change everything in the White House in 5 hours. They paint the rooms. They change around the walls. They put in the new beds. They put in the new decor, everything. And I'm like, motherfucker, do they have any idea how long it took to get this studio ready? If you had the White House team in here, the studio could have been done in, like, a day. 5 hours. I mean, if they could do a whole fucking house in 5 hours, the White House, with all those rooms, they couldn't do one studio? They could have done it in probably an hour. Fuck, man. But it was a really interesting show because they also talk about the nuclear football and how that's the big change of guard that happens behind the scenes. And apparently you had the situation with Ronald Reagan when he took office and Jimmy Carter when he was leaving office. Man, was that a wild story. So Jimmy Carter was negotiating to have the hostages released in Iran. There were American hostages in Iran. And they were working around the clock. Jimmy Carter hadn't slept for 50 hours before the inauguration. Isn't that amazing? 50 fucking hours. And he was just trying nonstop. So apparently right before the inauguration, the Iranians had Jimmy Carter's plane sitting on the runway with the hostages waiting to be released. They had made a deal to give back Iran some of their money. It was assets that the U.S. froze, because that's apparently what we know, what we do with Iran. So they were sitting at the end of the runway, and they didn't release the hostages until Ronald Reagan was sworn in as a giant fuck you to Jimmy Carter. But beyond that, there's some, I don't know if this is true, but there are theories out there. Tom Hartman, who's another liberal radio host who I think normally does a great job, apparently it could have been the case that the Reagan administration contacted the Iranians and told them, don't release the hostages until after Ronald Reagan is sworn in, because Ronald Reagan and his people wanted to take credit for it, as opposed to Jimmy Carter and his team getting credit for it, even though Jimmy Carter and his team did all the negotiations to get them out. So, wow, man. What a wild, wild story. There's actually video of Jimmy Carter sitting in the White House, you know, the night before the inauguration, on the phone all night with all of his people around him. And they're just trying their fucking damnedest to get to free all the prisoners. All right. That was an interesting random side story for you. Now let me get to what I actually have prepared. The World Post is shining light on a gigantic issue in China that's rarely talked about. So apparently, as a result of toxic smog, flights were canceled, factories were shut down, and traffic stopped in Beijing. Think about how bad that smog had to be. For flights to be canceled, factories shut down, it's the equivalent of, like, I live in the Northeast in the U.S. I live in New York. there were snow days when you're a kid. Like, oh, the snow's too bad, the roads aren't cleared yet, so you get a snow day, kids. We're talking smog days. The smog is so bad, they're like, all right, y'all, look, giving you a fair warning here, don't go outside and breathe that shit in. Oh, no, that's horrible. Traffic just stopped, too. So, in fact, they explain here, they say, the South China Morning Post reported that flight tickets to resorts in the less polluted south of the country were nearly sold out as Beijing's smog refugees prepared to flee the city. But China Central Television tweeted that 181 flights in and out of the capital city were canceled due to the smog. So there are now smog refugees in China, where the smog is so bad that people are like, we got to get out of here because of that stuff. They said there was an uptick in people going to the hospital, people with asthma problems. We covered a story in the past of a child that got lung cancer in China, a child. So they've explained previously, in some places, breaks the pollution meter. They have this meter that gives like the parts per million of, you know, the pollution in the air. And it's broken the meter. It's shattered the meter because it's just so above and beyond it. I mean, that's nuts. And so here's why this story is so important. There was a study from the International Energy Agency that found that there are 6.5 million deaths every year due to pollution. And air pollution is, of course, officially a carcinogen now. 6.5 million people. Could you imagine 6.5 million people die from terrorism? I mean, everybody would be going nuts, their fucking hair would be on fire. Here we have 6.5 million people that die due to air pollution. And people are like, what are you going to do? All right, I just see, I got cut off mid-sentence there because over my shoulder, it looks like one of the monitors just crapped out. So that's a little bit of a disaster, mid-story, but I will now fix it as I talk to you because that's how fucking talented I am here on Secular Talk. But yeah, so I'm going to continue to chat as I fix this because why not? We don't tend to think about problems in the way that we should. So the numbers really don't sink in with us now, do they? The only thing that really makes headlines are the more, I hate to use this term, but it's kind of true, the more sexy problems. So when you have somebody who's dressed like a fucking ninja with an AK-47 who's screaming at you in the desert, that looks like, ooh, be scared, you might be trying to break in your back door right now. But the real worry is stuff like this. The real worry is pollution. The real worry is lack of regulation. And they've done calculations before. In fact, I wish I had brought this up, and I wish I had thought of this beforehand, but they've done calculations before on the number of people that die in the U.S. from a lack of regulation, from illnesses that happen as a result of a lack of regulation. Like, for example, there was a resurgence of black lung recently in the coal mines because of lax regulations. So that's the stuff that's the real killer. Like, people don't realize that it's these things that over time build up and then fuck you over and kill you when you least expect it. So, I mean, the Democrats should do a better job of focusing on stuff like this. And obviously, the left in China, I mean, it's a communist one-party state, but people who actually give a shit about pollution in China, I wish that they were the ones who had power. But what you also see here, it's weird, because although China's communist on paper, they effectively function as like an uber-capitalist state. And this is just another good example of it, because they could, if they so chose to, they could just immediately go in the direction of renewable energy and renewable technology, and they could 100% move away from what they do now. And there are actually some reports that in some ways they have gone down that road. But obviously in other ways they haven't, which is why they have literal smog refugees. So that's a disaster. All right, now let me give you one more story here. as my monitor is finally following instructions. We'll end on a bizarre report that had me raising my eyebrows the other day. Whoa. So professional. So professional here on Secular Talk. I have a bizarre new report to discuss with you here. The Independent lays it out for us. A new study has tracked the porn viewing habits of 821 gay, straight, and bisexual men. The study, published in Archives of Sexual Behavior, found that 55% of men identifying as gay watched straight porn, while 21% of men identifying as straight watched gay porn. Dr. Martin J. Downing, the study's lead researcher, saw the viewing habits as some level of evidence of sexual attraction being a spectrum across sexes, at least in terms of the pornography the people viewed. So, for the 55% of men who say that they're gay who watched straight porn as well, I get that because, okay, you're gay. If you're a guy, you like guys. If you're a woman, you like women. Well, there's going to be a guy and there's going to be a woman in straight porn. So you could focus on whichever sex you're attracted to. Focus on that person of that sex. And, yeah, of course you could watch that and you can like it and you can get off to it. Duh. But they say 21% of men identifying as straight watched gay porn. Now, if they just mean, like, the guys said, yeah, I had seen it, like, once in my life because I was curious what it looked like, and I was like, ooh. If they mean that, that's different. But if they mean that 21% of men identifying as straight watch gay porn, and they watch it, like, regularly, and they get off to it, I got news for that 21% of straight men. You ain't straight. And I don't say that as a put-down. Of course not. People are equal. Sexuality is what it is. I don't judge it at all. You could be gay, straight, bi, asexual, whatever, man. I don't give a fuck. That's your prerogative, and I don't think any less of you at all, no matter what it is, okay? But just keep it real. By definition, you're not straight if you're watching gay porn or you're getting off to gay porn. That would mean you're bisexual. So, you know, they could say, hey, look, I'm attracted to the opposite sex too. Okay, so you're bi. We have a word for it. Like, oh, sometimes you like the same sex, sometimes you like the other sex. And by the way, the part of this I totally agree with is the spectrum part, where they say, oh, well, this is evidence that there's a spectrum. There's definitely a spectrum. So, in other words, you know, somebody could be effectively totally gay, somebody could be totally straight, and people could fall anywhere on that spectrum. You could be, I don't know, conceivably, you know, more attracted to the opposite sex, but sometimes attracted to the same sex, or more attracted to the same sex, but more times attracted to the opposite sex, or you could somehow be like 50-50, and you're attracted to both sexes fairly equally. But the 21% of men identifying as straight watching gay porn, if they mean that they watch it and they watch it often and they get off to it, you're bi, man. I don't know what to tell you. I'm just going by the definitions here. So I think that was why this study was interesting to me and why I wanted to talk about it, is that I feel like it's I don't know why that's not clear and obvious to people. You know, like, if you say you're straight, but you're attracted to guys fucking, you're not straight. It's just a definition thing. Again, there's nothing wrong with it, nothing against it in any way, shape, or form. Just let's kind of stick to the definitions or blow up all the definitions and start from scratch and come up with new ones. But in terms of what it actually means, that is what it means. Am I wrong? Okay. All right. Love you guys. I'm out of time. You know the deal. Come back tomorrow, same time, same place. Awesome Tuesday show. Much love. Mwah. Peace.